just dessert. She lowered the knife, and it grew even brighter. Just Dessert by M.T. Anderson. Alex Lee was born on Halloween, and so Halloween was always his favorite day of the year. Other kids groaned every year at the end of August, when the first fall breezes stirred the leaves, when the syrupy heat of summer no longer simmered on the streets. They complained that school was about to begin. When those cool breezes arrived, though, Alex Lee was only excited. It meant autumn was coming, with its chill and its mystery. It meant it was time for changes, a whole new year, and time for disguises, and, of course, time for his party and pie. This was until the fall when he turned 10, when everything changed, and he lost his appetite for pie completely. Perhaps what happened was Alex's fault. Perhaps he got his just desserts. A few days before Halloween, before his birthday, Alex was riding his bike around the neighborhood. He was thinking hard about his costume, alien pirate. In fact, he was thinking so hard about what he'd wear, mutant hands from last year, a bandana, a goggly-eyed fanged mask from the haunt shack down on Route 7, and a black patch to go over one of his mask's three eyes, that he didn't realize he had gone too far and rolled right out of his neighborhood, and that he was lost. His parents had told him never to go past Lunt Street. He'd forgotten. He stopped and looked around. He was on a wide avenue where the trees turned gold. He was way past Lunt. He was in forbidden territory. He was just turning around, a little embarrassed, when something occurred to him. This far past Lunt, he was probably pretty near Route 7. Sure, he wasn't supposed to be here, and his parents were pretty strict, but he figured he could ride around and find the highway. Then, 4 or 5 blocks from there, he'd be at the haunt shack. He could get his eye patch, his blaster pistol, and his monstrous head. In a way, he thought to himself, his parents would be grateful. He'd be saving them trouble. They wouldn't have to take him to the store themselves. He'd arrive home in an hour with his bag of stuff, and they wouldn't even have to think about driving down to the haunt shack, sitting at all those stoplights and parking at the strip mall. He looked around from side to side as if someone were spying on him. Of course, no one was. So he turned and kept on going, pedaling away from safe Lunt and away from his house on Maple Street. It seemed like a good idea at first, because it felt like an adventure. The sky was blue and the leaves were blazing red and gold. Alex loved that just when everything was about to die, it got beautiful. As if in celebration of his birthday, he thought with a smile. On Halloween, in 2 days, he'd be 10, and he would have his party. All his friends would come over in their costumes. His mother would bake him his birthday pie. Pumpkin, of course, with 10 candles. He and his friends and his older brother Doug would make a haunted house for the little kids in the neighborhood. It was going to be a blast. But soon he looked around and saw that he was completely lost. He had no idea where he was. There were houses still, and trees, but the lawns looked empty somehow, and there were no cars on the road. He did not like this neighborhood. No one was around. It was as if the world had died, but quietly. He was worried now. Time was passing. His parents would notice how late he was. There was no good excuse, and his dad had a bad temper. Alex bit his lip. He kept riding along the empty streets. He saw nothing that he knew. He turned right abruptly, and that was when it happened. There was nothing but a bright light. Alex tottered and skidded. He came to a stop. There was no road in front of him. There was only a straight line across the horizon and brilliant burning white. He couldn't tell if the line was close or far away. He held out his hand toward it. It was like the world had disappeared. A truck honked and swerved. Alex fell off his bike. He screamed. The truck was almost on top of him. It slammed on its brakes.
Alex looked up.
He was lying on the ground, half on the road, half off. His head was on the grass. He blinked. A UPS truck idled right next to him. The driver stood by his side, dressed in brown shorts.
"Are you okay? You okay, kid?"
Alex flexed his hands. Then he leaped to his feet. He ran around the other side of the truck. There were streets all around him. No dazzling light. He was on the corner of streets called Vane and Blair.
"What's going on?" the UPS guy asked. "Are you okay?"
"Did you see a burst of light? Like a flash, and it looked like there was nothing left here anymore?" Alex asked. The UPS man shrugged.
"No," he said. "I saw a stupid kid stop in the middle of the street and stare."
There was... Alex didn't know how to describe it. Whatever it was, he had seen it.
"Do you need help or something, kid?" the UPS man asked.
"Can you tell me how to get back to Maple Street?"
"Maple Street? Sure. You're a ways from home."
The man put Alex's bike in the truck and took him back across Lunt over to Maple. He dropped Alex in front of his house.
"Stay out of the road, kid,"
the man in brown said, driving off.
"If you don't know where you're going, stop racing to get there."
The truck pulled around the corner and was gone. That night, Alex thought about what he'd seen. He couldn't explain it. Maybe it was a brain problem. It had looked like everything had fallen away, and all that was left was light and flat. He was determined to figure out what had happened. He decided he would go back. He had to see those streets again. The next day, when his mom said, "Do you want to go down to the haunt shack and get the parts for your costume?" Alex said, "Sure, that would be great. And could they go by way of Vane and Blair?" His mother looked at him oddly. "No," she said. "That's an awful way to go. It's completely out of the way."
Can't we drive past there?"
"Honey," said his mother, "I have to pick up Doug from football, and I don't have time to drive around crazily."
They went to the haunt shack in the car. They stayed on streets Alex knew. He bought his mask, his patch, his piratical belt, and his blaster pistol. He wasn't excited about it now, though. He wanted to know what had happened and where the light had come from. He wanted to know if there was something weird in his brain, or if there was something weird on Blair and Vane. His mother dropped him off at home. She was off to pick up Doug.
"Oh," she said, "can you run down to Ferguson's farm stand and buy us a pumpkin for your pie?"
She gave him $10.
"It doesn't need to be huge. I'm mostly using canned."
"Thanks, hon. Be good. Remember, not past Lunt."
She drove off. He looked both ways, up and down the street. Then he went into the garage and got his bicycle. He was going over to Blair and Vane before he stopped at Ferguson's. He had to see what was there. He took his backpack. He soared down the road. The trees flashed past. The clouds were gathering overhead. It was cold. One more day, and it would be Halloween. He came to Lunt Street and shot right past. He followed the wide golden avenue. He tried to remember where he'd turned. He was in the neighborhood now where everything looked dead.
It was all neat and clean, but there were no people. There were no cars on the road, just a few in driveways, and the lawns looked so empty. Why? He wondered. Why? Then it hit him. They looked empty because no leaves had fallen on them. They were immaculate. The trees had turned. Some were red, some were brown. But in the storms of mid-October, nothing had blown down. Not a leaf. The roads were clean. They were not cracked. Now that he'd noticed, he was afraid. The empty houses rolled on past. There were no cars anymore, and each mailbox had exactly the same set of junk ads sticking out at exactly the same angle. He came to a cross street and looked to see where he was. He swiveled to look down the right-hand turn, and there was the blast of light again. The flat line. He skidded to a stop and stared. This time, it did not evaporate. It held. There was a bright blank plane in front of him and dazzling light. It was like everything had been destroyed. The only feature left was the line where the empty sky met empty ground. Alex looked behind him and saw houses and trees. He turned back to the glowing horizon. He walked toward it.
And then there was a furious honking, and he realized he was in the middle of the street and was almost mowed down by a truck.
It was the UPS truck. It screeched to a halt. Alex tried to understand everything that was happening. The UPS guy, the same one somehow, was yelling at him out the window. The guy climbed down from the cab of the truck and kept yelling at Alex, saying, "You again? Would you stop standing in the middle of streets? You heard of The Verge?" Behind the truck, the dazzle continued, and Alex ran to see the empty vista.
"Hey," said the UPS driver, grabbing Alex's hand. "What's going on with you?"
"Don't you see it?" Alex insisted. "Look, there's nothing. Just a flat line."
The UPS driver turned. He walked around his truck. He stood with his hands on his hips.
"Right here," he said. "Just a flat line."
Alex went to the man's side. There was a normal street. It had a gas station on it, and a mini mart, and a place that sold concrete lawn ornaments. There was a vacant lot where someone had set up a vegetable stand. They were just writing down some prices on a chalkboard. Alex couldn't speak. He didn't know what to say. He knew he'd seen nothing here but light, like a vision of his town's destruction.
"Is this real?" he asked.
The UPS guy studied him, confused. "Yeah, it's real," the man said.
He walked out a few feet and jumped up and down. His work boots clumped on the pavement.
"Real," he concluded. "What are you talking about, kid?"
Alex walked out into the road gingerly, as if he expected it to disappear.
"Is it?"
He didn't even know what to say.
"Hey. Hey, kid," the UPS man called. "I said, keep out of the road. What is it with you?"
Alex crossed to the fruit and vegetable stand. Cars whizzed around him, honking. He stood there, staring at the apples. The fruit and vegetable stand was laid out under a green tarp. The UPS man pulled the truck into the lot.
"I'm taking you to your house and talking to your parents," the guy said, climbing down. "You're going to get flattened one of these days."
"Is this real?"
Alex whispered again. The woman who ran the stand, a large woman with a slight mustache, looked at him suspiciously.
"Come on," said the UPS guy. "Let's go. I'm talking to your parents."
Alex turned and confronted the man.
"Who are you?" he said. Who are you, really?
The man squinted.
I'm the delivery guy, he answered.
Alex picked up a pear and put it down again. He went for the apples. The woman said,
Not the apples. The apples aren't ready yet.
She bustled over to his side.
Try the cherries, she said. They're flavorful.
Alex looked down and saw a stack of pumpkins. And it hit him. He'd buy one here, as proof. He knew it wasn't a dream. He knew he'd seen what he'd seen. He reached down and picked one up. He hefted it. It seemed light. The woman made a face. He handed her money. And then he looked past her at the gas station. The gas station was empty, completely empty. Behind it, there were a few feet of tall grasses, and then a featureless white nothing marked only with a flat line. The glow was brilliant. It lit the windows of the empty gas station so Alex could see the whorls where they'd been scrubbed. Alex was astonished. Wildly, he looked the other direction. Past the convenience store, it was the same. Nothing but light. He reeled in astonishment. He grabbed the pumpkin and ran for the truck.
Okay, he called to the UPS guy. Take me home. Please, take me back. Take me back. All right. What's the problem?
Take me home. My bike.
We can put it in the back.
Take me. I'm on Maple Street, down Wist Lake, past Lunt.
I know. Past Lunt.
Alex ran to get into the passenger seat. He clamped on his seatbelt. Over the tops of the trees, he could see a great emptiness. He shut his eyes. He put his hands over them. He hunched down, doubled over, tried to block out that terrible empty light. He felt the UPS guy get into the truck. He heard the guy start the engine up. They pulled out. He felt them driving. And suddenly, Alex was afraid. He did not think the UPS man was really a UPS man.
Are you taking me?
Alex asked.
To your house,
the UPS guy said, irritated.
You really have got to stop eating so much sugar cereal, kid.
In 10 minutes, they were there. The UPS guy got out and rang the doorbell. No one was home. He said he was going to drop Alex's parents a note and tell them what had happened. Alex didn't care. He wanted to get away, to be alone. He took his bike out of the back of the brown van and he unlocked the front door with his key and he said goodbye and a sloppy thank you and he went inside. He slammed the door shut. The house was quiet and still. He had the pumpkin in his arms. He carried it into the kitchen and put it on the counter. Then he fled upstairs. He sat on his bed and stared at the carpet. All evening, he avoided the pumpkin. It sat downstairs on the counter. His mother called up to him.
Hey, honey. Thanks for getting the pumpkin. You're the best. Did you talk to Mrs. Ferguson?
Alex didn't know what to answer.
Yeah,
he said, and then realized that was a mistake.
What did she have to say?
Alex just answered,
Nothing.
He could feel the pumpkin accusing him of lying. He didn't want to go into the kitchen when his mom and dad made dinner. When his dad called him, he went reluctantly down the steps. Doug sat in the living room, yelling stuff at the TV. Alex walked silently by the pumpkin and kept on going. The pumpkin sat as if glaring at him. The family ate dinner together with the pumpkin on the counter beside them. Alex felt terrible for going where he wasn't supposed to and for lying to his mom. He didn't know what to do, because now that he had lied,
He couldn't tell them the story about the brilliant light at Blair and Vane, or his vision of emptiness and destruction behind the gas station. He had to keep silent. After dinner, his mother asked him to clear the table and wash the dishes while she made his birthday pie. He didn't want to see her stab the pumpkin. It was like the pumpkin was his sidekick in crime. He wanted to throw the pumpkin out. He didn't want a birthday pie. He wasn't sure he deserved one. He picked up all the plates and took them to the sink. His mother got out flour and butter and canned pumpkin to mix with the real. Alex pulled out all the utensils from the stack of plates and ran them under water. His mother was chatting with him about his costume, but he couldn't even listen. She picked up a knife and headed toward the pumpkin. Alex watched miserably as she went to cut the top off. Then a strange, awful thing happened. As she touched the pumpkin, holding it steady with one hand, it began to glow softly. She lifted her hand away, looking at the pumpkin with concern. The glow lit her apron orange. She lowered the knife, and it grew even brighter. She looked mystified at the pumpkin. She said to Alex,
"You didn't get this at Ferguson's, did you?"
Alex didn't answer.
"Look at this," said his mother.
She touched it, and the radiance grew brighter. She knocked the pumpkin with the palm of her hand. It rocked and spun on its side.
"It weighs almost nothing," she said.
She put down the knife and called for Alex's father.
"Ken? Ken? Come down and see this."
Alex's father tromped down the steps while Doug ran in from the living room saying,
"What's up? Is Alex in trouble?"
Both Alex's father and his brother stopped, gobsmacked, and stared at the glowing pumpkin. While they stared at it, Alex's mother reached out and grabbed at the plump side of the gourd. Her hand smashed through it. It was nothing but a skin, an image as thin as foil, and inside it there was nothing but emptiness and light. The light flashed and was gone. Then the pumpkin skin lay like a burst balloon on the counter, fading to black. Alex's mother put down the knife and put her hands on her head. She turned to Alex's dad.
"What are we going to do?" she asked.
Doug let out a long breath, as if something was really, really wrong. Alex and his family stood in the kitchen. Alex had no idea what had happened. He had no idea what to do. He knew he was going to have to tell the truth now, but he didn't know how anyone would react. They had all seen it. He was sure of that. They had seen the same light, the same emptiness that he had seen
from one face to another.
They just looked shocked. "I didn't," he said, but didn't get any further. "You went past Lunt Street, didn't you?" his father accused, raising his voice. "You didn't listen to us, and you went past Lunt."
"Ken?" Alex's mom said soothingly. "Ken, he's confused."
"We were trying to protect you," said his father. "Nothing is done over there. Nothing's finished. We don't need that side of town. And you went over there, and they didn't have time to throw anything together. What have you done, huh? What have you done, Alex? Now everything's ruined."
Alex backed away from his father. He didn't know what his dad was talking about. He was scared. He felt like he had felt on the edge of all that blank, brilliant space, none of it known.
He turned to his mother. He said,
"Mom, what's going on?"
She laid her hand on his father's arm and stepped forward.
Honey, she said, there's not really any way to apologize for this, but things aren't really like they seem. We haven't been entirely, honest with you.
Oh, man, said Doug. Here it comes.
Alex, I want you to listen to me. You probably saw something today. I don't know what. Let's just keep it between the four of us that you know. No one else needs to hear about this. They'd be mad.
Alex whispered.
Who? What are you talking about, Mom? That's not important, she said gently. What's important is that you're okay.
Alex said, who'd be mad? His mother sighed.
You've got to understand, Alex. They're working very hard all the time to make all this stuff for you. Everywhere you go, everything you see, they have to build. I mean, they're real quick about it, but it's a lot of effort. And they'd be really, really angry if they knew you saw through it. It would be like finding your birthday presents early when they're hidden in the closet. Not a good idea.
Alex was agape.
What are you saying? He asked his mother.
And she explained softly.
You're the only person there is. I mean, the only real human being. All of this is set up just to, well, how would you put it, Ken?
I wouldn't put it at all, his dad said in irritation. We shouldn't be talking about this.
Everything, said Alex's mom. This town, the next town over, New York City, Montreal. It's set up only for you. There's nothing otherwise. There's nothing on the other side of the world. No Australia, no France. There's no globe. Nothing but light and a flat plane. Just dessert.
Alex reeled. He thought of the emptiness he had seen behind the mini-mart. Doug asked,
if he knows anyway that there's no France, do I have to keep taking French? Yes, Doug, said Alex's father.
Alex, honey, said his mother. How do you feel? How are you feeling?
Doug kept complaining.
There are like 10,000 ways just to say the word it in French. It's the dumbest language. Doug, said their father in a warning growl.
In reality, Doug explained to Alex, the French people you've met all talk with a kind of Texas accent when you're not around. Then when they see you coming, they just go, flan, 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 flan.
Douglas, said their father, I am only asking you once more.
Alex didn't know where to run. He didn't know who to talk to. He couldn't talk to any of his friends. He didn't even know who they really were. He couldn't talk to any of his friends' parents. He couldn't go to the police. And if he ran too far, to his grandparents, say, he didn't even know if the world would exist. It might just be a flat line and burning light. His mom said,
wherever you went today, you must have forced them to come up with a landscape really quick. They couldn't think things through. They didn't have time to give anything an inside. The pumpkin wasn't really a pumpkin yet.
She picked up the dead skin with a finger and put it down again.
The more we concentrated on it, the flimsier it got until, poof!
She leaned down and pulled Alex to her.
Hey, honey. Honey, I know this is surprising.
He finally asked the question he was most afraid of. What are you? He asked his mother, the person, he thought, who loved him most on earth. His mother and father looked at each other. He saw that there were tears in his father's eyes. His mother answered gently,
what we are doesn't matter. It wouldn't make sense to you. All you need to know is that we love you. We really do. We love you so much, as much as you've always thought.
Even more,
said his father.
Alex, we've built the world for you.
Doug muttered.
Even some countries that don't need to exist.
We are not deleting France, Doug, Mrs. Lee said. That's final.
She pulled Alex close. She put her arms around him. He could smell her shampoo. It smelled like it always did. But he didn't even know what she was. He didn't even know what species. He didn't know what her hair was. He didn't know what she knew. He didn't know when she was watching him or why or for what. She said,
I know this is confusing, but one thing shouldn't be confusing at all. We really do love you. That's why you're here.
We may have to.
Alex's father coughed and continued.
We may have to wipe out a day or so of your memory. We'll see how stuff goes, but don't worry. They'll just arrange for you to have a concussion. You know, you'll fall off something.
It happened before, said Doug, when you thought you were having a hernia operation. Really, you found out what was going on and you saw one of us like we really are, so we had to make you forget stuff.
Let's not talk about that, said Alex's mother, and she kept stroking her son's brow, whispering, We love you, Alex. We love you. We love you more than you can imagine.
So he lay in bed that night, the night before his 10th birthday, staring at the ceiling. He heard his parents downstairs, playing at being parents in case he should hear. In the next room, his brother studied a language that was not spoken anyway in a country that didn't exist. The next day, Alex would have a party. His friends would all be there. They'd be dressed up in their costumes. Behind their masks would be their faces. But he didn't know what eyes would be hidden behind their faces. He would have to play along. They would be watching. There was nowhere he could run. They had made every place for him. He lay in bed, and the minutes clicked toward the moment he would finally turn 10.
You are done with this story now. You can shut the book and make the nightmare go away. That will feel good and secure. You know it's not a real story, of course, because you know that you are not part of a plot to make a whole world for Alex P. Lee of Maple Street, the one human being who exists. You know you have your own thoughts. You know you are real.
So after all, if there were only one actual person in the world, one person for whom the whole illusion is carried on by unknown beings, it would have to be you. And it might be that if someone wanted to break that news to you gently, someone who thought you should know, they might, of course, slip a story into a book, a kind of message to say, watch out. They might contact you this way because no one else will let them speak to you. They might hope you'll read one of the books that are made to ensure that bookshelves and library windows look full to you. A book, for example, of stories by a man who may never have existed, an illustrator who may never have set pencil to paper. Don't look up and worry. Don't knock the walls to confirm that they are solid. Just turn the page slowly. They're watching. Don't show them that you know. Please, don't show them a thing.